Good morning to the court, Mr. Connell. May it please the court. My name is Jonas Bednarik, and I represent the appellant Richard Simmers in this matter. Before I delve into what I'd prepared for you this morning, I want to address some of the concerns the court had earlier about whether or not the district court could adjudicate Mr. Simmers to more time than what he'd previously been sentenced to after a remand. And respectfully, Judge, I don't think the district court can in this particular case. And the reason for that is that Mr. Simmers' guideline range, albeit a guideline range we believe was inaccurately determined, was determined to be 110 to 137 months. Mr. Simmers was ultimately sentenced to, I believe, 120 months of incarceration. In this situation, the judge, Judge Shabazz, gave no indication that he should be sentenced to anything more. In fact, he could have sentenced him to an additional 17 months if he felt the guideline range was infirm. He could have gone higher. So I think on a Palladino remand on this case, unless some new facts come to light, which I very much doubt, I think that the judge lacks the ability to sentence Mr. Simmers to anything more than 120 months.
I don't know what you mean by lack of ability. I think what you mean is he's unlikely to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think not only is he unlikely to, Judge, but I think without additional facts, which he had in front of him at the first sentencing hearing, I don't think he can. I don't think
You don't think he has the power to do it?
Without additional facts, I don't believe he has the power to do it. If he would have sentenced Mr. Simmers to 137 months, I'd be telling...
I'm following your argument, but I think it's... I agree with Judge Posner. It's unlikely he would do it, but he certainly has the power to do it. There's nothing that prevents him from doing it. And Palladino doesn't foreclose a higher sentence.
Clearly, Palladino wouldn't foreclose a higher sentence, mm-hmm. but in my opinion, without additional facts, it would appear extremely vindictive on the part of the district court to sentence Mr. Simmers to any more time than he was sentenced to.
Well, not if he gave good reasons, which Court of Appeals thought were reasonable. Remember, when the guidelines are advisory, that means a judge can bring in additional considerations, as in the olden days. And it is subject to appellate review for reasonableness, but that doesn't eliminate the possibility that the judge might articulate reasonable grounds for thinking that if his hands are not tied by the guidelines, the sentence should be longer.
Well, Judge, without going on ad nauseum about this issue, because there's some other things I want to address, but I think not. I think that...
No, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're
mm-hmm.
wrong. Yeah. Well, what does it mean for guidelines to be advisory? It means they're no longer a floor or a ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're treating them as a ceiling.
In this particular case, without additional facts.
No, that's wrong, because the judge, looking through the record, looking at all the facts, might say, well, if I hadn't been bound by the guidelines, these facts would have persuaded me that an even higher sentence was warranted.
And, Judge, that would necessarily include additional facts.
No, it wouldn't. It's an interpretation. It's the penal significance of the facts. These facts may have a different significance for Judge Shabazz than they did for the authors of the guidelines.
And that's why, Judge, that's why...
for guidelines to be advisory rather than mandatory.
That's why Judge Rovner keeps asking that question to all counsel, because it's a risk. I mean, in your opinion, it may be a very limited or narrow risk, but it's definitely a risk.
It is certainly something that as previous oral argument has elicited, it's something that the defense bar, especially in my community, has discussed.
Right.
Whether or not
seem to have discussed it and come up to a very dangerous, erroneous conclusion, because if you're telling your clients that on remand the previous sentence is the ceiling, mm-hmm. then you're misinforming them.
For purposes of this argument, I'm telling the Court of Appeals that I don't believe the judge should sentence Mr. Simmers to anything more than 120 months.
It's not our business. If it goes back for a Palladino hearing, then the judge will, decide whether, realizing now that the guidelines are not mandatory, he thinks the sentence is too high or too low. And in either event, he will resentence your client.
The idea is to go back and say to all of your friends, all bets are off.
Right.
Correct. And theoretically, the maximum sentence on this crime is the statutory maximum sentence.
Precisely.
Right.
And And should Judge Shabazz determine that facts warrant a sentence higher than the 120 months, he may well apply those facts to this case. I guess...
Precisely.
Yeah. So it's not just your friends, it's your client. The clients need to know. It's not just defense counsel. I mean... That needs to be conveyed, that there's some risk here. It's not likely, in your opinion, your judgment has a place, but it could happen.
Correct. I think it's far more likely in a scenario where the guidelines tend to operate as a shield when there's a sentence at the maximum side of whatever guideline range was determined.
And speaking of clients, Mr. Jones is here pro se. Are you arguing for him as well, or only for Mr. Simmers?
I'm only arguing for Mr. Simmers. I'm not exactly sure the procedural posture of
yeah, because he has in his brief an ineffective assistance claim, and since we've never found ineffective assistance on direct appeal. And the record hasn't really been developed here enough to consider it. Were someone here arguing for him, I would surely be asking if that oughtn't be withdrawn and brought on collateral review. But I'm having a problem understanding, you know, what's happening with Mr. Jones, but maybe Mr. Connell can help me.
Quite frankly, Judge, I haven't been exactly abreast of Mr. Jones's situation. I know that his appeal was operating independently. They were consolidated, and I haven't been following his pro se pleadings. I frankly don't know if I've gotten all of them. If I can assist in some way, I would. I would have conflict concerns. Turning to the next issue that I had prepared for you this morning, and that's whether or not the district court properly applied an enhancement in Mr. Simmers' case pursuant to Section 3C1.2 for recklessly endangering safety during flight. I submit to the court that such an enhancement in his offense level was inappropriate in this case for several reasons. If we conduct a survey of the case law that this court has used in determining whether or not such an enhancement is applicable, all of those cases but for one, which I'll discuss in a moment.
He's driving without lights in the fog, and he runs off the road and so on. That sounds pretty dangerous.
Respectfully, Judge,
he's endangering the passengers in his car as well as anybody who might be using the road.
First of all, Judge, with respect to the passengers were knowing participants in the offense.
Yeah.
The guidelines specifically exclude endangerment of knowing participants. These two individuals picked him up after knowing he was a fugitive from justice and giving him a ride. So I submit that the passengers in the vehicle can't qualify as other individuals pursuant to the guideline adjustment. With his headlights off, it's 8:30 in the morning on a rural country road in very rural Wisconsin. This chase lasted a very brief duration. It was less than 2 miles in duration. The speed of the officer pursuing Mr. Simmers never exceeded 65 miles per hour on a 55-mile-per-hour speed limit road. The officer's vehicle never got closer than 1,000 feet to Mr. Simmers' vehicle. And when we characterized the...
Isn't that because he was just being so careful? He was... Mm-hmm. Afraid.
Well, quite possibly he was 1,000 feet away in hopes of being careful, but that further bolsters my argument that he was not put at great risk of death or substantial bodily harm if he was 1,000 feet away and not pursuing so closely.
The fact that the car's headlights were off at some point during it, I mean, he needed to proceed with extreme caution. He didn't even know where the car was.
At 8:30 in the morning, Your Honor.
Well, but the pockets of dense fog.
The fog is the complicating factor.
Perhaps the officer was prudent in keeping 1,000 feet between himself and Mr. Simmers' vehicle. But that begs the question, is how is he then in peril's way? I don't believe he is. I think something more, the case law suggests, it doesn't suggest.
Well, the point is that he wants to get Mr. Simmers, right? He wants to stop him, right?
Indeed.
And if the conditions are so rough that he has to stay 1,000 miles behind, 1,000 feet behind him. Doesn't that tell us what we need to know here?
I see I'm out of time, but I'd like to respond to your question. Yes, it does tell us what we need to know, and what we need to know is, was that officer at risk of death or substantial bodily harm? And 1,000 feet behind this vehicle, traveling at 65 miles per hour on this rural road with no other traffic around, doesn't place him in that condition of peril that's necessary to support the enhancement.
Yeah, but the officer might have reached Nebraska by the time he could have stopped Mr. Simmers, because of the weather conditions. And had he gone any faster, heaven knows what would have happened here.
Judge, I believe it was you that stated in United States versus Smith that any dangerous situation doesn't amount to the dangerous situation contemplated by Section 3C1.2.
But what is the definition of reckless endangerment?
Creating a substantial risk of death or serious bodily harm. Whether or not this conduct rises to that level is something that Mr. Simmers refutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Bednar. Mr. Connell?
Good morning. My name is Paul Connell. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Western District of Wisconsin, and I was responsible for the prosecution of Mr. Simmers below. Judge Rovner, why don't I begin with Mr. Jones? The order of the court was that his case would be decided solely on the briefs. With regard to his...
But there's a problem.
Yeah.
There's a problem with it being solely decided on the briefs, because he's got this ineffective assistance claim, and we all know that if someone were here mm-hmm. representing him, that someone would withdraw that claim.
Yeah, and
it just seems terribly unfair, doesn't it?
Well, Your Honor, in our opening brief, I think on page 28, we put that you should dismiss it as premature,
right.
And he
right.
should certainly
okay.
have the opportunity on 2255 to raise that.
Okay.
Okay. Why don't I turn that to the two issues raised by Mr. Simmers. The first is whether the court should just affirm his conviction but then order a limited remand under Palladino. I filed a 28-J letter this morning in which the government agrees that since he got a 120-month sentence out of a guideline range of 110 to 137, we really just can't know what Judge Shabazz would have done. Since we can't read his mind, we should just send it back for that quick look remand under Palladino. Let me turn, unless there are questions, let me turn to the second issue, which is the reckless endangerment under the guidelines. The court did not clearly err in concluding that there was reckless, that Mr. Simmers recklessly created a substantial risk of death or bodily injury to another person during flight in this case. It's uncontested that the defendant...
Is Mr. Bednar correct that the passengers don't count as endangered people?
I actually think he's wrong. They were not willing participants. They were in the car, but Mr. Simmers was driving, and I just point to the record at 92, paragraph 12, one of the passengers, I think it was Mr. Simmers' wife's cousin, her name is Lori Holk, and she was screaming at Richard Simmers to slow down. Now, Judge Shabazz relied on the passengers as that other person. He relied on the officer, and he also relied to anyone else that could have been out there. And as the record made clear, the officer who testified at sentencing testified that this rural road, I think it's Oak Ridge Road, is used by, there's some Amish community out there, and it's a farming community, and so there very well could have been people out there as well as a school bus. This was about the time when a school bus might be on that road. The defendant turned his headlights off. The road conditions were poor. We got patches of fog. You got a curvy, windy, hilly road. And the officer testified that at times as he was pursuing Mr. Simmers, it was like he was in a cloud, which is what caused him to slow down. So there's ample basis for the district court to conclude here that the two-point bump should apply. Mm-hmm. And unless there are questions, I'd ask you to affirm the conviction and the guideline range calculations and just order that limited remand under Palladino.
Okay, thank you.
Thank
you. Mr. Bednar? We have no time, but you can have a minute if you'd like.
And I probably won't even take all of that unless there are questions, but very briefly, with respect to the willing participants, if you look at the pre-sentence investigation report at paragraph 12, it identifies the passengers, there was two of them in this vehicle, as receiving a call from Mr. Simmers that the police were after him. Could they come please pick him up, which they did do. That, in my mind, clearly makes them willing participants. They know what he was doing. They know what he was up to. Off they went to pick up Mr. Simmers to get him away from the long arm of the law. That, in my mind, clearly makes them willing participants in the offense. Also, with respect to something that Mr. Connell said, is he referred to death or bodily harm. It's not death or bodily harm. It's death or serious bodily harm. And as this court stated in United States versus Smith, we can't make hypothetical arguments about somebody that may be harmed. We need exact evidence about what might happen as a result of this conduct. In Smith, an individual poured anhydrous ammonia out the window of a car. And it was perceived that that may cause damage. That wasn't good enough for this court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Bednar. And you were appointed, were you not?
I was.
Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. Thank Mr. Connell also. Next case for argument, United States versus